We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Sean, 2024 NFL draft class. Can we talk about it, sir? Seven players that were selected during the 2024 NFL draft, former Notre Dame football players. We had expectations that it could go up to eight. That was kind of my expectations, but Sam Hartman did not get drafted. So we'll talk about his destination, even though I don't know if you saw this, Sean. We'll talk about this in a couple minutes, I guess, a little bit more in depth. Sam Hartman did get the highest guaranteed money of any UDFA, though, for just some conversation piece there. So obviously there was demand for him. I'm sure there was a bunch of teams that called, and that drives up his asking price for, you know, where he's going to go. That's the agent's perspective. But let's talk top of the board, Sean. We'll go into more into day two, day three, obviously. But let's start with Joe Alts, because I haven't talked to you about this. Number five overall to the Los Angeles Chargers. We won't talk as in-depth on this one because me and Brian broke this down on Friday, but obviously you haven't gotten a chance to talk about it with me anyway, Sean. Number five overall, Los Angeles Chargers, going to play for Jim Harbaugh out west, your favorite coach in the National Football League now. So let's talk about the fit for highest Notre Dame drafted offensive lineman since the year 1969, Sean. Been a long time, obviously, since we've had a kid go, offensive lineman for Notre Dame go top five. Your initial thoughts, Los Angeles Chargers, Joe Walt.
Continuing the narrative of O-line U at Notre Dame, correct? Best O-lineman going into the draft. And this is the great story about this young man. Everyone else has to do it by going out. The Alabamas, they do it by going out and getting guys that are five stars. Notre Dame just brings offensive linemen in no matter where they rank, and they end up being dudes. That's what they do. And they end up being better than Alabama's offensive linemen in the pros. It's bare. The proof is in the pudding for over a decade. Like, yeah, you can rank them higher. You can draft them higher. But at the end of the day, our guys end up better because they're better coached and they're better prepared. I don't think anything would be different. And we're going to talk about his partner bookend that ended up getting drafted a little bit higher probably than most people thought. But I just think that goes to the faith that I think Joe Alt, there's a duality to it. I think it goes to the O-line U narrative and the faith that scouts and coaches in the NFL have with players that come from the Notre Dame offensive line system. And on top of that, I think it speaks to the culture that Jim Harbaugh is trying to establish and the respect from afar that he had for Marcus Freeman in the program that he was built. You look at the players that he took from Notre Dame, and I think that shows you, you know what? I think they're similar to the way we coach. They coach hard-nosed football, O-line, D-line driven, great defense. That's the type of players I want. And I think there's a duality into Joe Alt being drafted at five, because a lot of people thought they would move out of that spot.
Yep.
They moved back. A lot of people thought. They thought Joe Alt would probably end up at seven at Tennessee.
Yeah. I thought the personally for me, I thought the window, the bubble was 5 to 7. I didn't think he would get past 7, but you never know, Sean. I mean, we're getting late reports that JC Latham was high on some guys' board. So, I mean, it just takes one guy to select JC Latham over Joe Alt to Joe Alt slide a couple spots. I mean, that's as easy as that conversation happens. Obviously, he becomes the top-ranked offensive tackle selected, the highest drafted since 1969. It's just, I mean, first and foremost, Sean, I mean, can we just talk about the testament to this conversation? Because we're not talking about a kid that had yes, he came from NFL bloodlines, but it's not like this kid was given
third on the depth chart coming out of fall camp.
Brian was talking about this on Friday. It took 3 injuries at left tackle as a true freshman to give Joe Alt a spot. And we forget, and we'll talk about his partner in crime next here on the show, and because we're going to go in the order of when they were picked. But Blake Fisher was supposed to be the golden boy as a true freshman. He was the golden boy. Joe Alt was the high school tight end that some people had as a 3-star that, like, he needs a lot of work and a lot of physical development. And you look back at it, Sean, it's like freshman year, freshman All-American after he got the nod, right? After Blake gets hurt and after Tosh Baker and Michael Carmody falter, then Joe Alt becomes the guy, freshman All-American, and then 2 years of just outstanding film, right? Especially in 2023. And you look back at it, it's just like, that's the developmental arc that you hope for, but is not usually attainable. Like, you don't usually see it that easily, man. A 3-star borderline, 4-star by 1 or 2 platforms, that becomes a first-round pick, a top-5 pick in 3 years. That doesn't happen that way typically.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's tournament season or the fight for playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into some serious cash. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. We are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You heard it. 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with NBA, NHL, and college basketball entries today on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. It is so easy to use. All you have to do is download the app in the App Store or Google Play Store, sign up, add some funds, and you're in. Then you just find your favorite player and decide more or less on the suggested stat. It really is that easy. The night I joined, I picked Hannah Hidalgo to have more than 14 points, Maddie Westbeld to have less than 10 rebounds, and Marcus Burton to have more than 18 points. And guess what? I hit on all 3. Bing, bang, boom, baby. Money in my pocket. It was just that easy. Download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, download the app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let me ask you something, Double R, as a talent evaluator and your time that you spend with Draft Talk consistently.
Right.
You just opened a door to something that made me think about when I was talking to Charles Jagasaw.
Okay.
And he was talking about the most impressive thing was not the way that the starters were coached, but that the backups were coached even harder. Because he knew at some point I need to be prepared when my moment came, and exactly what right. happened from his recruiting when the moment came during bowl prep, he was ready.
Yeah.
He was ready, right? Mm-hmm. So now you talk about Joe Alt, you talk about Charles Jackson. When the moment comes for these guys, are they ready? Go right. back once again. How many injuries had to happen for Ashton Craig to get in?
Yeah.
But when he got in, boy, was he ready.
He was ready.
Was he ready? In Death Valley, late third quarter, meat of the game, high intensity, this kid just comes off the sideline. He's ready. That's the most impressive thing about that O-line. That's the most – I'm sorry, man. When you consistently put forth guys that are third on the depth chart going into games that aren't expected to even play, but they get the opportunity to come in, and when they come in, they're prepared, that says something, man. Not only about whomever is coached, because it's happened with several coaches over that room. So that says more about the player accountability in that room. That is consistent. It's consistent, and it bears fruit. That, from a talent perspective, how does that look? That has to look great from NFL execs and draft rooms. Like, yo, look at this. Like, they're probably watching Joe Alt at Stanford or at Clemson, and they see Ashton Craig walk in, and they're like, yo, who is this? This kid's third string?
I mean, it's a testament to the program and the development that they have at the offensive line position, Sean. I mean, it's especially increased, obviously. You know, we're not going to talk about Jeff Quinn too much here, right? But obviously, Harry Hiestand was a great developer. And it seems like Joe Rudolph's a good developer. I mean, obviously, I don't expect him to be Harry Hiestand in that department, but he's had several offensive linemen playing in the NFL. You know, he had Brian O'Neill when he was at Pittsburgh, and he's had Ryan Ramczyk at Wisconsin and Logan Bruss. And like, he's, the center who I was, Joe Tippmann, that was drafted last year as a starting center for the New York Jets. So yeah, man, he is definitely in continued developments. Will it be as good as Harry Hiestand? I have no idea at the end of the day, but he is obviously a good football coach, and he's had a long track record of development. And now Joe Alt is a great symbol of that. I mean, Joe Alt's been through the ringer a little bit, right? Three offensive line coaches, and that's another thing that was going against Joe Alt, Sean, that we don't talk about enough. He had three offensive line coaches in 3 years.
Yeah.
That doesn't usually help development at all. That stability is not good. Like, it's just not. It's really not. So
one of the reasons we thought Blake Fisher ended up leaving. Like, yo.
Yeah.
You know, but
he's part of it, yeah.
But it's like you spoke about it. There were no clear advantages. I will say the return of, and we're going to get to this with some of the other guys down the line, but the return of Harry Hiestand, I think, was pretty important in the development of both of these tackles, especially Joe Alt.
Especially because freshman year of Jeff Quinn growing into his body, and then sophomore, you're getting Harry Hiestand, which is kind of really a big foundational year is sophomore year, especially because Joe's young. Mm-hmm. I think that was big for sure. Yeah. I also think him having Matt Bayless early on in his career for the first couple years was pretty beneficial for him as well. Body by Bayless, right? So I think all that stuff goes into it. Sean, at the end of the day, a lot of people can watch film. Well, let me rephrase. There's a decent amount of people that can watch film and know if a player's good or not, right? But you're trying as a scout to alleviate risk as an evaluator. And I believe that Joe Alt was the top offensive tackle off the board and a top five pick because he just checked so many boxes, Sean. Like, there just wasn't a lot that you looked at and said, like, man, that makes me unsettled on Joe Alt. I already talked about it. High school tight ends, that plays into his favor. 6'8" plus, 320 pounds with 34-plus inch arms. That hits every threshold you want. Tested as an elite athlete. Has a father that was a very good offensive lineman in the NFL. Not a good offensive line or an average offensive line, like a very good one in the Chiefs Ring of Honor. By the way, he also was coached by Harry Stanford for a year, but has that Notre Dame letter next to him, right? Has that symbol next to his name, which means something for people. All those things together, that's why Joe Alt went top five, because you just couldn't poke a lot of holes. Does he still need to get a little bit stronger? Sure. But Sean, you know how easy it is to increase weight room strength? Let's go to NFL strength and conditioning staff. Like, that'll be something that will be very easily fixed. Needs to be fixed. So Joel went that high because he just checked way too many boxes. Yeah. Let's talk about the next guy off the board, Mr. Blake Fisher, Sean, who Blake Fisher was projected by most to be a third to fourth round pick. Okay. So he went up, he went number 59 overall in the second round to the Houston Texans. And Sean, I just want to read off their depth chart for a second, because I believe right now Blake Fisher has a decent chance to start as a rookie in the NFL.
Heck yeah.
They have Laremy Tunsil at left tackle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's there. They have Titus Howard at left guard, former first-round pick who settled solidly into guard. They have Juice Scruggs from Penn State, second-year player who's a pretty solid center. They also have at right guard Shaq Mason, who's been a mainstay in the NFL for a long time. At right tackle right now, their starting offensive tackle is Charlie Heck. Of the guys that are returning. Okay. They have Charlie Heck. They have Killian Zerer as a backup offensive tackle. And they have David Sharp. Sean, Blake Fisher could start as a rookie, which is kind of wild to say. As much as we've talked about, there's still a lot of development that needs to happen. But Blake Fisher gets put into a offensive line room that, one, he has a chance to start very early on in his career. But two, Sean, the Houston Texans are a foundation and organization that is on the rise, man. What a job that staff is doing. What a job D'Amico Ryans did in year one, protecting CJ Stroud. Blake has an opportunity here to play a lot of football in year one with the Houston Texans.
Think about that. Out of all the criticism he took and all the doubt and people saying, you know, he should have stayed another year. What did we say? It only takes one team. It only takes one team. And he has talent. You can't say he doesn't have talent. It takes one team. Now, my question was, yo, what type of team does he go to? A Pittsburgh Steelers that wants to run the ball and that is more run oriented. But now, young man, that dude back there, the rookie of the year, the dude that threw for 4,000, took us to the playoffs, keep him off the ground. That's going to be very interesting, right? But I love it because he has a quarterback that is really good at getting rid of the football.
Yeah.
I think he played with some offensive tackles during his time that weren't exactly elite. Laremy Tunsil might have been his first truly elite offensive tackle. The two tackles he had his senior year at Ohio State, they were good.
I mean one went top 10, so yeah. Like, they were pretty good. Yeah.
They were pretty good. But yeah. I understood, man. And I think, would you compare, is it too early to say this offensive line class is probably less competitive than next year's batch?
Oh, no, this is a great offensive line class, this 2024 group. I haven't done enough film evaluations for 2025, strictly offensive linemen, but like off just the early rip, 2024 was maybe the best offensive line class in the entirety that I've ever evaluated. 2025 does not seem to that level to me. Does not seem.
Paris Johnson is. Look, man, people use the word freak way too much, bro. Trent Brown is a freak. I need to see a lot more before I start applying the word freak. Laremy Tunsil has become.
Sean, your two most hated words that since I've known you. One is hater, two is freak.
Like, you know how we just pass out words just like anybody that's big and seems like they.
Yeah. Paris Johnson also wasn't 6'8", but I mean, we can keep putting false information in the chat. I did like Paris Johnson as a prospect, though. I did. I think he had a lot of developmental upside. So,
did you like him last year, the way he played?
I didn't really see him for the Cardinals last year. Was he bad?
You didn't see him. You didn't hear about him that much, did you?
Mm-hmm.
I saw him against the Bears. Get smoked.
Oh, really?
A couple of times. Yep. Montez Sweat put him in the wrench.
Okay.
Squeezed him. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. But he's freaking.
Yeah. Yeah, Paris Johnson is definitely not 6'8". Now, if we're talking about DeJuan Jones, then we could be talking about a 6'8" guy. We could be talking about a 6'8" guy in that conversation.
Who actually, DeJuan Jones came on.
DeJuan was playing good ball for Cleveland, yes. And then he got hurt. He was playing pretty good ball for the Browns.
After injury, someone got injured. He stepped in. He was playing really well.
Yeah. Yeah, too bad that kid hates football. That's a conversation for another day that we'll not get into on this podcast. But yes. But so Blake should have an opportunity though, Sean, to get back to him. Am I surprised that Blake went in the second round slightly? Am I shocked about it though? No, I'm not, because a lot of the same things we just talked about with Joe Alt stand with Blake. Blake is not nearly the player that Joe is. He's not quite the talent that Joe is either, but he's a multi-year starter at Notre Dame. He's got the Notre Dame emblem next to his name. He's long and he's certainly got untapped talent. So second round pick, late second round, Blake Fisher.
Tidbit from the pro day. Remember I texted you that the Texans O-line coach is one of the coaches that jumped in to coach Blake during the workout multiple times.
Yes.
And there you see the Texans come up and get him in the second round. Like I said, it only takes one team to fall in love with.
Yeah. Oh, you're not wrong about that. So, yeah. So Blake Fisher, number 59 overall to the Houston Texans. We'll see if he's able to gain that right tackle spot. But again, Sean, unless there's a free agent that hits the wave and the Houston Texans make a play at him, it looks like he might have the inside track to right tackle. He's going to have to beat Charlie Heck, but I feel like Charlie Heck's not very good. I don't know. I could be wrong about that. I've never heard Charlie Heck in like a positive vein other than him just being a swing tackle. So I could be completely wrong about that. But regardless, let's move on, Sean. The biggest surprise for me in this class, biggest surprise, a player that I had mocked in the fifth round goes in the third round, Sean. Mr. Maris Leifau is drafted number 87 overall to Sean Steyer's favorite team that I'm sure I'll talk to him about it on Tuesday night. Sean Steyer's favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, draft Maris Leifau. Now, Sean, heading into the draft, linebacker was about as big a need or one of the biggest needs for the Dallas Cowboys. Obviously, Leighton Vander Esch had gotten injured and banged up, no longer on the roster. We know what happened with Jalen Smith, kind of diminishing down the stretch. I know they signed Eric Kendricks this offseason, who was a longtime Minnesota Viking, played with the Chargers last year, but just kind of a stopgap. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be in the long-term plans for them. They really need linebacker help. They do. And they're very high. Maris Leifau, apparently, man. Top 100 pick, number 87 overall. Initial thoughts, and we'll dig deeper into what it could mean for him year one. But Maris Leifau went a lot higher in this draft than I anticipated him going.
The defensive guys that got drafted, starting with Maris Leifau, they owe a lot to Al Golden. No Al Golden, I don't think any of these guys reached the potential that allowed them to go down to the Senior Bowl and perform the way they performed. And Maris, you have to tip your cap. Everybody that took a shot at this kid that said he wanted to make sure that he got his body right to go prep for the Senior Bowl and the Combine. And people were like, well, you should have played in the bowl. No, he made the right decision based upon everything he had been through physically at Notre Dame. The young man made the right decision, and I'm happy to see this young man reap the fruit of his labor. Absolutely ecstatic, even though I felt like, wow, okay, Cowboys. I actually think he fits their style, though. To get the best out of him, the way they use their linebackers, which might not be the most intelligent way, but with Dan Quinn gone now, we'll see how things change on the defensive side of the ball. But they're all about speed. And if you just activate Maris and let him run and make plays, you know, he might end up being – I'm interested in seeing how they use him as well. I do. I'm happy for the young man. You talk about somebody that has persevered.
Yes.
Man.
Injury. A lot of naysayers in the fan base. A lot of people were weren't big fans of Marist, but apparently the NFL liked him, Sean. Liked him a good bit. Marist had a very interesting draft process. I thought he had a very good showing at the Senior Bowl. I thought he showed a lot of good there. A lot of good there. Then he went to the combine, only ran a 40, which was kind of interesting. And then his testing numbers at the pro day were not very good for a guy that I consider a very good athlete on film. I mean, again, the processing is very inconsistent, but the athlete I didn't think was very inconsistent. I thought he was always a really good athlete. So we'll see how he fits in, man. As of today, the starting inside linebackers, they run a, and I want to mention, so the 425 base is kind of what they're listed at least from our lads. Mm-hmm. Starting inside linebackers are Eric Kendricks and Damone Clark. After that, they don't have a ton of depth. And again, Eric Kendricks is a little bit old. Damone Clark is a guy that who knows. But I think you made an interesting note here, Sean. I don't know if Marist Leufau was going to play a start as a rookie. I think he's probably going to be more a key reserve rotational piece and then also a special teamer. I think that he'll do that very well. But he is going to be playing for Mike Zimmer, who's a new defensive coordinator for Dallas Cowboys. And for people that don't know too much about Mike Zimmer, Cincinnati Bengals, long-time defense coordinator, also coached with the Dallas Cowboys before. And then he was the Minnesota Vikings head coach for several years. Sean, Mike Zimmer is a great defensive coach. Absolutely tremendous defensive coach. And what is he, Sean? You mentioned it already. He's aggressive, man. Mm-hmm. He likes to blitz. He likes to be really penetration style in his defensive fronts. He likes to create a lot of negatives. And Marist has upside there. So I'm interested to see how Mike Zimmer visions this young man. And also, did you see the video circulating of Marist talking with Jerry Jones and Mike Zimmer and Mike McCarthy or whatever? Man, they need to lock Jerry Jones away, man. They need to put him in a home or something. They need to get him out of there, my friend. Like he's wild, man. He's a wild dude at this time. But still, really cool moment for Marist. You're absolutely correct. I think he lands with his ideal defensive coordinator, Mike Zimmer. I think that match could be very, very beneficial for him.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Zimmer, singer. Mike Zimmer. Did I tell you that I saw Jerry Jones in Indianapolis, by the way? Did I tell you about that one?
How'd that go?
I guess I can tell the story because it's not like incriminating or anything, right? So I'll tell the story. People saw it. It's not like it's a hidden secret, right? So Sean, the one night we were at a bar and just chatting with a couple guys, having a drink, and someone taps me on the shoulder and was like, hey, can you move? We're taking a picture, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, sure, I can move. So I move over and I didn't look back to see who it was. Then I look back. It was Jerry Jones taking a picture with two probably 30-year-old blonde girls. Okay? 30-year-old blondes. Takes the picture, proceeds to walk with the two 30-year-old blondes to his limo, and he was gone, sir. He was gone. He was gone. So I don't know what happened from there. People could use their imaginations.
That's why the Cowboys cannot prosper right there.
Is that why?
That's why. I've been trying to figure out, with all the talent they've had, why in the world can they not break through this glass ceiling? Yep, it's the owner. In more ways than one, it's the owner.
Oh, God.
That's just affirmation.
Jerry's funny, man. He's a funny guy. I love Jerry.
He's a hero, though. He's a national treasure, and he's a hero to a lot of guys that are 20 or 30 because they wish they could walk out of a bar restaurant with two blondes headed to their limo as well.
I mean, a lot of people were probably super jealous of him at that point. So, yeah, man. Yeah. Good for Jerry, man. Good for Jerry. But
did he meet him there or did he fly him in?
I have no idea. That was literally my first. Yeah, that's funny. That's funny. That one went over my head for a second there too, man. That's yeah. Good for him though. Good for him. Whatever.
Oh, all right,
so Marist Leufau. That's it, Sean. That was day two. Blake Fisher 59. Marist Leufau 87. That was your day two NFL draft picks for Notre Dame. It was a very, that's three of the seven that were drafted here. So day three was very busy for Notre Dame. Funny enough, I expected, because I thought Cam Harkin potentially go in the third round, maybe Audric potentially dependent on a team fit, right? No, Irish English. Someone said the same thing about if maybe there were his granddaughters, and the answer is no. They certainly were not his granddaughters. That's another one. We got to move past that one. Day three was very interesting, Sean. Fourth round, I was certain that Aldrick Estime and Cam Hart were both going to be taken in the fourth round. Neither were taken in the fourth round, Sean. No one lasted, and they all lasted until at least the fifth round. So first one to go in the fifth round was... I'm mixing someone up here, but I believe, yes. Cam Hart was the first one to come off the board, Sean, in the fifth round. Cam Hart goes number 140 overall to the Los Angeles Chargers, okay? So first one to go off the board, number 140 overall to the Los Angeles Chargers. This one was very, very interesting, okay? So I want to give you guys a little bit of background on this one. Because I had told you all, I believe, that I was on the channel, or maybe I was just on the message board. I can't remember. But Cam was we were thinking third round, more than likely, maybe fourth, dependent. But he's falling, right? He's falling. And I'm seeing some corners go before Cam that I'm just like, man, I think the NFL's higher on Cam than those guys. Like, Tarheeb still, and I'm not trying to throw shade at the young man out of Maryland, because he was drafted in the fifth round, and I'm sure he's going to be a good football player for Los Angeles Chargers. But he was actually the first corner they took in that round. And I was like, what's the deal here, right? So I actually texted a scouting buddy I have that is on a – he scouts for a team that was not in the range of picks that we were at the point. I think I texted him when it was like 130-something was on the clock. And I was like, hey, man, is there a medical red flag here? Because I've been told before the draft that there was no medical red flag on Cam. He had passed through and he'd been good and everything was fine. So I text a guy that has no bias, and I know that he's going to give me an honest answer because he's not on the clock, and so he's not in the conversation, right? So I text him and I just say, hey, was there a late medical red flag on Cam Hart? Was there a late one? And actually, let me read this word for word. I will give you guys exactly what he said to me here it is. So he said, nothing major, passed through well, surprised to see some of these cornerbacks go before him. So why was Cam Hart a fifth round pick? Why did he fall to 140? The answer I have for you guys is I'm not 100% sure. There was no medical red flag late. There were, and we've talked about this, the major concerns over Cam were, one, medicals with the shoulders. Two, the biggest concern overall was lack of ball production. Only had two career interceptions while at Notre Dame, and both of them came the same game against Wisconsin a couple years ago. And the other one was long speed, as far as like elite long speed. Now, not elite long speed, but 4.5 flats for a guy that is 6'3" with 33-inch arms is plenty fast, plenty fast. So I'm here to say, though, that I'm not totally sure why that fall happens. But I will say this, and we'll talk about this a little deeper. I think Cam Hart, although he had to be patient and it was very unfortunate that he fell, I think he falls into a really good situation in Los Angeles. Because right now, Los Angeles has Asante Samuel Jr. as one of their starting corners, and he's a very good player on the NFL level, very good player. But on the other side, Christian Fulton was signed this offseason from Tennessee. And funny enough, Irish AJ, I saw you in the chat, not top end speed versus others. I think the corner that was drafted before him, or a couple that were drafted before him, ran slower than Cam. So I don't think it's the top end speed. It was just a weird situation. It was just very weird. I truly do not have an answer for you on exactly what happens. I'll try to get a little bit more insight, but again, my scouting friends, who's a legitimate, like an area scout for a team, was just like, I don't know why some of these corners are going higher than him. Like, I'm not really sure. So it was just a little bit odd. But like I was saying, Asante Samuel Jr. one side. The other sides, though, I mean, you have Christian Fulton that you were signed as from the Tennessee Titans. He's been a little banged up and hasn't been great. And outside of that, it's guys like Chris Wilcox that have no proven production to be a starting NFL corner on the next level. So Cam Hart's going to have to battle with Christian Fulton to be the corner opposite of Asante Samuel Jr., but I think he has a chance. I truly do think he has a chance, man. I think that he could start sometime as a rookie. I do. I firmly believe that, man. Firmly believe that. He is a little bit, and this is kind of what we're talking about with, you know, how teams pick sometimes, right? The guys that fall boards, the up boards. We talk about medicals all the time, but another thing that we don't talk about enough is scheme fits. And I do think that the one sticking point or the one thing that may have caused Cam to fall a little bit was that Cam is a little bit scheme specific, in my opinion, in that he's taller, he can turn and run, he's explosive getting downhill, but he is a little bit limited in change of direction. If you go look at like his numbers from short shuttle and three cone, like it just isn't the greatest change of direction player of all time. So I think that there's going to be some schemes like a off man team probably won't love Cam Hart, but a press man team and then a zone heavy team, they could, I think that they would like a player like a Cam Hart. So Sean, as I bring you in, man, again, we're talking about, I think it was unfortunate that Cam fell to pick 140 to Los Angeles Chargers, but I do think that there's opportunity for him, man. I do think that there's opportunity for him to play a lot opposite Asante Samuel Jr. It's going to be up to, obviously, him impressing in rookie mini camp and then in the training camp, but I think he's got a good opportunity in front of him, man, out in L.A.
And familiarity with Chris O'Leary being in the room.
You are, you
know, so that's always an advantage to have someone that knows you and is going to fight for you in that room amongst the other coaches. Great position, but he's going to be challenged, right? You're in the same division with Pat Mahomes, bro.
Now, yeah.
And he has two dudes now that can run. So,
well, Sean, the good thing is the one thing that I was talking about as far as like the areas of concern with Cam or ball production, right? And turning the football over. Well, if he's playing opposite Asante Samuel Jr., they're going to be throwing a Cam more than Asante Samuel Jr. So he's going to have a chance to prove that he can make some plays on the football, man. He's going to have some plays to prove that he can do it. And I think that, hey, I know as a Notre Dame channel, we hate Michigan, Jim Harbaugh and everything. Jim Harbaugh is a very good coach, though. And I will say this, Sean, is that I believe that Los Angeles Charger team in the future is going to be on a little bit of a rise here now, right? And shout out to him. Not only did he get two guys in the draft, right? Also signed somebody else as a free agent. And Los Angeles apparently is very high, and Jim Harbaugh is very high on former Notre Dame players. So we'll see how it figures out, but I do like the fit. I like the fit for Cam.
And Notre Dame players have a pretty good history with the Chargers, right?
A lot on the team right now.
Right? We see, just won a Super Bowl, but he spent a majority of his young career with the Chargers as well before signing as a free agent in Kansas City and winning the Super Bowl. So, I mean, yeah, Notre Dame players usually can go out there. Jerry Tillery went out there. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out well for him. But it just seems like certain organizations fall in love with certain programs. You know, Notre Dame and Dallas, yo, they love Dallas. The Dallas Cowboys love Notre Dame players. Minnesota, the Bears have had an affinity. The Bears, Joe Alt was number, honestly, I was hearing the entire time that Joe Alt was number one on their board, but they didn't believe that he would make it to them.
Yeah. Yep.
Right. And there's video out that Ian Cunningham had to keep Ryan Poles from trading up. Ryan Poles kept wanting to trade up in this draft from the ninth slot. And it was either for Romo Dunze or Joe Alt. And then once Alt went at five, then he got a little bit more scared and wanted to trade up to make sure he got Romo Dunze. And he fell in their lap. So that just goes to show you, man, you know, I'm glad Ian Cunningham kind of grabbed his coattail like, yo, relax. Let the board play out. You know, for Cam Hart, it's not even about, I'm sure he would have loved to go higher, but I'm actually happy with where Maris landed and where Cam landed.
Well, team perspective, right?
Yeah, from a team perspective.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid to ask you this, Sean. I actually kind of like the Bears draft this year, man. I think they did pretty well. I don't know if you agree with that, but I think they did pretty well as a draft this year. I know they had like five or six picks, but
I'm
going to
ask you a question at the end of this. Because I've been getting a lot of pushback from Bears fans, and I'm like, I don't care what you say. Just think it's an interesting debate. But I'm interested to see how you and the rest of the fans think about it.
All right. All right. Well, we'll do that at the end of this segment. That sounds like a great idea.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Number fifth round, Sean. Second player in the fifth round here in the 2024 NFL Draft. This one surprised me a little bit, too, because I expected it to be Aldrick next. But It was not Aldrick. Three picks after Cam Hart. The Atlanta Falcons selected former Notre Dame linebacker J.D. Bertrand as the fifth player off the board for Notre Dame, right? Unless I'm missing someone, that would be the fifth player off the board. Yeah, fifth player off the board. Interesting fit here, Sean, first and foremost. Oh, I forgot to ask you about the – did you see the Cam Hart conversation on the phone with Chris O'Leary and stuff? That was dope, man. Yeah. That was really cool.
It was really dope, yeah.
So Atlanta Falcons draft J.D. Bertrand. For people that don't know – he's a Roswell, Georgia guy originally, right? That's his home. And I also saw the video of him getting the call from Atlanta. And he gets to stay home, man. Has to be a pretty cool feeling for a Georgia kid to get that phone call. A little bit earlier than some people thought. I thought he was going to be more in the maybe six-ish round, somewhere in that ballpark. But a fifth-round pick by the Atlanta Falcons, J.D. Bertrand gets to go back home.
I love Mel Kiper. He needs to relax a little bit.
Oh, what'd he say? What'd he say?
And he was like, yo, he's the next Zach Thomas. I said,
whoa. Oh, no, he didn't. No, he didn't. Did he?
Yes, he did on live TV. Yes, he did. Oh. And I think it was Lewis Riddick was like, so he's going to the Hall of Fame. And then he backed up a little bit. I was like, wait a minute, man. That, maybe in size and stature. Right, but you go look at production at Texas Tech. Oh,
that's also a little disrespectful for the JD from the size and stature thing, because he's like 2 or 3 inches taller than Zach Thomas, man. My guy was like 5'11 on a good day. So,
you know, just once again, yo, Maris, JD, make sure you give a nice gift to Al Golden, because his defense and what it did for you and the level it took both you guys to, you saw the fruit of it this past weekend, young gentlemen, young men. You did. He deserves a lot, and it's right in line. Because you look at a guy like Jermaine Pratt and how he was who coached him when he got to Cincinnati. It was Al Golden.
Some old guy.
So, look, now you should be really excited about the talent that has elevated in their room and how they can be developed in this defense. We expect fully Drake, KBA, all these guys 2-3 years down the line, like, oh yeah, that's second round picks. Third round picks. Oh, without question. Yeah, we got JD to go in.
It's a really interesting process for JD too, because JD played pretty well at the Senior Bowl, in my opinion. I thought he had a good week overall. But then Sean, he wasn't able to test. A lot of teams just kind of throw those guys out because they're just like, I don't have any verified measurables on you, man. I know we got GPS data, but I mean, a kid that has some, again, straight line, I don't think there's too much concern with JD. I think most people thought he would run pretty well, but like the change of direction numbers, like the explosiveness numbers, that was probably a little bit more of a question, but we didn't get those numbers.
Because I think he comes into a situation where he can get playing time. And he's going to be smart as a whip. He's going to be one of the smartest dudes on the defense immediately, right? And I actually like the Trice pick I think they got some
I
really
love
good...
the Trice pick.
Absolutely.
I loved Atlanta's like mid-round to late round selections. It was just the first pick that I didn't even hate the Rucaroro pick. I know he was picked before Johnny Newton, but like guys, there was some character stuff with Johnny Newton. I just want people to understand that. Jerzon Newton's excellent though. Like there's no doubt. But there were some character question marks there, okay? But I liked Rucaroro as a football player. It was just Michael Penix with the 8th overall selection when you just paid a quarterback $180 million.
You don't want to believe what they're telling you. You don't want to believe what the Falcons are telling you. They're telling you.
I don't.
They're telling you. Hey, yo, we don't believe this dude is going to make the full term of this contract.
Which is fine. But you're paying him $100 million guaranteed.
They overpaid to get him for the 2 years. That's what they did. They said, okay, we're overpaying. And I don't think they were thinking that way until they – look, Mike, hey, give Michael Penix credit. Everything he needed to do on that pro day, he did it.
Oh, no doubt. I don't even dislike Michael Penix with the Falcons necessarily. I just think the process is like, what the heck, man?
But it's only flawed because he went to that pro day and said, oh, I don't know if he's going to get to the second round. Now, think about it. Maybe they went into it saying, yo, maybe we can jump back in the late first and get him. And then you don't know what they're hearing.
Yeah.
You know, from the Denver. With Denver taking him over Bo Nix, you don't know. So
Raiders maybe a 13.
Maybe a 13. So now they're saying, oh, we got to get in front of these dudes or we have to take them here. Like, we want to come away from this day getting him. And we value him. Now, this is the question. With all of their questions, you value him over Dallas Turner? You value him over Jared Verse? By the way,
Rams with Verse 19, right? Good pick. Yep.
They get Fisk and Verse?
Should be athletic up front. Yeah. On top of Kobe Turner. That's pretty good athletes.
Don't we say good things always happen to good organizations? That's quite frankly the greatest defensive tackle of all time.
Yeah.
And then two guys just fall into your lap.
The common misconception, because the Rams have been trading away first round picks so often, is that the Rams aren't good drafters. And it's actually the exact opposite. They're actually very good drafters, which is why they kind of trust themselves to hit on mid and late round guys more than most teams. But
Puka Nacua is pretty good, right?
Kyron Williams, fifth rounds. Pretty good. Oh, by the way, people are hating on the Rook Aurora, but that is how you pronounce Rook Aurora. That's how you pronounce it. It's not my fault that it sounds like a Scooby-Doo impression, okay? Exactly. I did not create the name. I am just here to say one more time for you all in the back. Rook. Aurora. It's how you say his name. What do you want me to say about it? It's how you say his name. Yeah. Get off my back.
I think the Falcons literally are told you what they were thinking. They told you. They told you, and people just don't like it. It's like, okay, you might not like what I'm saying, but I'm at least you know
right
where I stand, and now it plays out. Now, is that fair to the guy? You just got $100 million. I care less about fair. As long as I'm the starter, I hold my job as long as I can.
Sure.
The check's still clear.
I did like the Brandon Trice pick, to your point. I did like the Brandon. And they got Brandon Dorlus as well on day three out of Oregon. Defensive line is going to be a lot better, I think, moving forward. Because they still need some edge help, but hopefully Dorlus can provide a little bit. Brandon Trice as well. Sean, the linebacker room, though, that J.D. Bertrand is going to be kind of to compete against. So here's the projected starters are Caden Ellis, who's formerly of New Orleans. He had over 100 tackles last year, four and a half sacks. Pretty productive football player. Nate Landman, formerly of Colorado. Troy Anderson, who was a second-round pick a couple years ago out of Montana State. They also have Donovan Mouton and Milo Eifler, who I believe was a Illinois player, if I remember correctly. I think Eifler was. Sean, JD might not start this year, but I think, one, he'll make the team because I think he'll provide special teams value and communication value. And we'll see, man. I mean, like, hey, Caden Ellis is a pretty solid player. I imagine that he'll be a starting inside linebacker, but I mean, Nate Landman, could JD at some point beat out Nate Landman to be the starter? Could he hold off a Troy Anderson? I mean, it's possible, man. I mean, I wouldn't count it out.
Who's the DC there? Oh, Raheem Morris is the head coach. Who's the DC though?
Their defensive coordinator for them is Jimmy Lake, former Washington head coach.
Yep. Now I know Raheem Morris loves smaller, faster linebackers.
He does.
He does. So
yeah, no doubt.
We'll see. JD could have a shot.
I think it's possible, man. I do think it's possible. So we'll see how it all plays out. But yeah, man, it's an interesting fit. And I think that it could be one that is beneficial for JD long term. Yeah. Because they need to continue to bolster that roster, because it's not a great roster. I mean, it's an okay roster offensively, but defensively, there's a lot of holes in that roster. And they need to continue to fill it. Only 4 picks after that, Sean, we have our third Notre Dame Fighting Irish player come off the board in the 5th round. Audric Estime, drafted by the Denver Broncos with pick 147. First and foremost, Sean, the NFL stinks. How do you draft Isaac Garendo over Audric Estime? I know what people are going to say. One ran 4.33. Isaac Garendo stinks. Stop it. He was a backup at Louisville. But we're going to, oh yeah, he's better than Audric Estime. Give me a break. Sean, 2 years. We did this 2 years ago where people undervalued a Notre Dame player. You know what he did last year? He was second in the league in rushing and made all pro, Kyren Williams. Well, how did Manville do this again? Twice in 3 years. They undervalued a really good Notre Dame player, Notre Dame running back, and let him fall to the 5th round. I'm shocked that this happened. I actually am shocked. I figured the NFL would learn from their mistake, but they let it happen again. And I think that long term, they're going to look back and say, like, yeah, we probably should have drafted Audric Estime 2 rounds earlier. We probably should have done that.
We know what it is. We know what it is. It's the undervaluing of the position.
Yep.
Right? And because of the way the game is going, they value speed more.
Sure.
They looked at the numbers instead of looking at the film and said, yo, we value Garendo and other guys higher. If you look at the film of Audric Estime, constantly seeing 8-9 in the box for 2 straight years, constantly. Mm-hmm. No other option. Look at the receivers Garendo had on his squad. I don't think Garendo saw 8-9 in the box. He definitely had a better play caller.
Yeah.
That set him up. And he was a backup. This is a young man that basically had the offense on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
His last year in Notre Dame. I don't understand what they were seeing. I have no clue. Double R, I have no clue.
His film was so good this year, man. It's so good. And we're treating him like, look, I actually talked about this before. I don't know if you agree with this. I understood Kyren Williams falling, because I looked at him and said he ran 4.6 something and he's only 199 pounds.
Yeah.
That's like, look, he's a smaller guy who also isn't a dynamic athlete. I understand why Kyren Williams fell a little bit. Mm-hmm. I don't get the Audric Estime thing. Yeah. He ran faster at the pro day. We were both there for the Kyren Williams pro day, Sean. I know the reported time was out there, but he ran slower at the pro day than he did at the combine. Yeah. On my watch anyway, Kyren Williams. Slower at the pro day. Kyren improved on a slow track at the pro day, okay? Had a 38-inch vert, had a 10.5 broad. All his other numbers were very good for Audric Estime. And by the way, his film in 2023 was really good. Mm-hmm. And the NFL, despite him weighing 220-something pounds, said, nah, we don't care. We don't care. You're not that good. You're not that good. So I have a feeling. And I had a feeling about this with Kyren as well, Sean, because I had Kyren rated much higher than a 5th-round pick that he was drafted. I had a feeling that Kyren Williams was going to make a lot of people look stupid, okay? I have a feeling that Audric Estime is going to make a lot of people feel really stupid in 2 to 3 years. I feel it in my bones. Now, the situation he gets into is a little bit of a crowded room, actually. It's not like an automatic that he's going to see a ton of time.
Williams is out there.
Javonte Williams, who has not quite lived up to expectation, but it's been partly injuries, but partly Denver hasn't been very good. So it hasn't all been just on him. But Javonte Williams, Samaje Perine, who's a very good, like, situational player.
Good vet to learn from, though. Good vet to learn from.
Oh, yeah. They're their games are actually kind of similar. Mm-hmm. I think Aldrich's a little bit more explosive short area, but P. Ryan and his game are a little bit similar. Jaleel McLaughlin, who's a good change of pace, third down type back. And then they also have Tyler Beatty, who came out of Missouri a couple years ago. So the depth chart's actually pretty solid. Aldrich will have to fight to potentially be a focus behind Javonte early on. But again, 2 to 3 years from now, I wouldn't be shocked if Aldrich Estime is a starting running back in Denver and just makes a lot of people look dumb. I feel like that trajectory could happen.
I agree. I think Coach is going to fall in love with
him. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so. I think so. Yeah. Because he just does everything. And the other thing too, Sean, on top of him just kind of doing the little things right, great personality. And also, Aldrich's only 20. He's still 20 years old. There is developmental upside, man. Upside for Aldrich. We're acting like he's a finished product. He's like 24 years old. He's a young cat.
With 1 year in college of being the bell cow.
Yep.
Like he's only had 1 year of being the bell cow.
Yeah, not a lot of tread. Yeah. Not a lot of tread.
Plenty of tread left on his tires. Absolutely.
Less than 400 touches in his career, actually, Sean, which is it's good for him long term. So Aldrich Estime picked number 147 to the Denver Broncos. We'll see if he's able to make the step. So make a step and be able to create a role in the Denver Bronco offense. So Sean, again, that's Joe Alt, first round, Blake Fisher, second, Maris Leafowl in the third round, the lone player picked there. Then we had 3 5th round selections. We had Cam Hart, JD Bertrand, and Aldrich Estime. Only one guy left, Sean. So we were expecting. I was sitting there anxiously on the end of day three because I thought that there was an opportunity for both Javonte Jean-Baptiste and Sam Hartman to get drafted. I thought both of them had the opportunity to potentially do that. Only one of them did, and that was Javonte Jean-Baptiste, who went 7th round, number 222 overall, to the Washington Commanders, Sean. First and foremost, was very happy to see Javonte get drafted because he did everything Notre Dame asked him to do this year, man. In his 1 year, I was very happy for the kid, first and foremost.
Isn't it amazing how everyone connected to Notre Dame in this draft seems like they made the right business decision? Seems like Blake Fisher made the right business decision. Javonte, most people didn't expect him to get drafted. I think he got drafted because he made the move from Ohio State to Notre Dame. Good business decision. And that's just that. Those are things that kind of flow downhill, right? You're happy for these kids. You're happy for them getting the opportunity in the NFL. But that bodes well for Marcus Freeman and Notre Dame. That's just something to put on your resume. You know, this is how many guys we got drafted. I think they might exceed that next year, you know, depending upon the guys that come out. So you have to be super excited to see a young man like him get an opportunity. And like you said, it depends on the structure of the team that he goes to and what he's going to be asked to do and what the depth chart looks like. But we've seen that this young man isn't afraid to work. We saw that from his 1 year at Notre Dame. Like, he's willing to put in the work to make himself better and to give whatever is needed from that team, because that's exactly what he did for Notre Dame this year.
So here's the depth chart that he's walking into with the Commanders, Sean. They actually have a big need at defensive end. So they lost, obviously, Chase Young.
That's because they draft all defensive tackles. It's almost like, dude, just go get the best defensive tackles.
Well, Sean, but they also drafted Montez Sweat and Chase Young very early, and they got rid of both of them this past year, right? Yeah, well, man, Montez ended up playing pretty well for Chicago, man. He played pretty well for Chicago. So, but this is like the island of misfit toys, this defensive end room right now. Mm-hmm. So they signed 3 free agents this offseason, Sean. Doris Armstrong from Dallas. Also, Dante Fowler Jr. from Dallas. And they signed Cleland Farrell, former top-round pick, who played San Francisco this past year, was drafted by the Las Vegas Chargers. I think they were still the Oakland Las Vegas Raiders. I said Chargers for a reason. Las Vegas Raiders, formerly the Oakland Raiders. Sean, it's 3 names that we know.
Yeah.
Doris Armstrong was actually pretty good for Dallas, but we know Dante Fowler. He was a high-round pick. Cleveland Farrell was a high-round pick. But combined, those 3 together only had like 15.5 sacks last year and 18 tackles for loss or something like that. Like, they weren't incredibly good, okay? They weren't incredibly good. Incredibly productive, I should say. Doris Armstrong, pretty good. The other two, rotational pieces, right? Outside of that, their depth chart is KJ Henry, Andre Jones Jr., Jalen Harris, Josh Pryor, and Ife Obada, who I don't know. I don't know who that is. Javonte Jean-Baptiste, not a foregone conclusion to make the roster. But the way I look at it, Sean, you're going to keep at least six defensive ends on the NFL level because you need depth there. Mm-hmm. He needs to beat out Ife Obata. He needs to beat out Jalen Harris, and he needs to beat out Joshua Pryor to make this roster potentially. I think he can. I think he can make the roster. What is his role year one? Probably special teams if he makes the team, right? That's probably more the likely scenario for him. But is anybody counting out Javonte Jean-Baptiste to work? I feel like that dude's going to work, man. He's going to work.
Man, you know what? You keep talking about this, and you talk about the Commanders. Look, the Commanders' entire staff, literally the entire staff, was in South Bend. And I was sitting there. I remember texting you like, why are the Commanders and the entire staff here? Like, I mean, they just came with a four-court press, right? I'm like, they wouldn't take Joe Alt, would they? Not at two. Like, no, they're not going to take Joe Alt. But you see the fact that they got Javonte. And this just goes to the work that you put in as a scout. Because going to these pro days is not always about the top guy. Like, you standing there having conversations with each coach when you're talking to Mike Denbrock. Remember I told you he had a long conversation with Mike Denbrock. Is he asking him about Jaden Daniels? Probably so. But is he also asking him, well, what do you think about Sam Hartman since your time here? Have you been able to talk to him? Have you watched his film? It's a lot of things that you can get from having these conversations. You know everything that happened at the combine. And you see the Commanders come and grab Sam Hartman in free agency. And then to grab Javonte on the way out of it at the last part of the draft. Yo, that's scouting and putting your homework in and asking about guys. Because when you get to that point, it goes down to – I'll give you a great example, right? Competitive schools. And my daughter, when she applied for college, she applied to some pretty competitive schools, right? And she ended up going to USC. USC is highly competitive, right? Especially with the theater program. And it was literally the gentleman that came as a representative to her school her junior year where she had her first conversation. And then he came back and actually interviewed her. He literally fought for her in the room of applications. You know what I'm saying? Nice. And that's like the scouting world when you get to like the sixth, seventh round. It probably happens in earlier rounds, but it's like there's at that point, there are so many area scouts probably arguing for their guy. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the guy I love. Well, this is the guy I love. And everybody's in there arguing, right? Who can win the argument? And Dave's like the pro day where Javonte Jean-Baptiste was probably an afterthought to a lot of Irish fans, right?
Sure.
But there were probably conversations with someone on that staff on that day about him. There were conversations about Sam Hartman on that day. So it just goes to show you, man, that's why I respected what Lewis Riddick said at the end of the draft when he showed all the respect in the world to all of the other people for teams around the league that go out on the road constantly that will never be mentioned.
Yep.
But their work is seen firsthand, you know, on those 3 days. So just to point out that tidbit, man. And that's why even when you were with me on pro days and I'm texting back and forth, we watch those subtle things. Like, yo, you see that coach talking over there? You see that coach from that team talking over there? Because it's those subtle conversations that end up landing certain people in certain situations, right?
Right.
So, like you said, what was the buzz during the Senior Bowl? Because Maris on his pro day didn't post what we thought he would post. But something happened. Something happened. The Cowboys were impressed, I guess, down in Mobile. And I'm sure they had conversations. It's, man, I'm becoming more and more impressed as we follow recruiting and then get to follow these guys as they matriculate to the draft and the draft process. You know, this is a lot. It never stops, bro. It never stops. I'm talking about next year has already started. Like, area scouts are already.
They've been out.
Yes.
Blesto and NFS have been out for months already, Sean, because they go to So for people that don't know, one of the big services is Blesto. Like I'll use NFS as an example because it's a little bit different. Well, actually, no, I'll use Blesto. So Blesto Scouts, Sean, I think it's five teams make up Blesto Scouts. They each have scouts they put into kind of this one organization, and they go out to all the spring practices, and that's where we get the heights, weights, official measurements, and the spring grades and all that type of stuff. So yeah, man, they've been out for months. Those guys are working on next year's class months ago. It's a long process, man. It is not a short process. It's a tiring one, man. It's a tiring one. So yeah.
Tip of the cap.
So Javonte Jean-Baptiste, last player to be drafted by Notre Dame, that ended up being seven players drafted, Sean, for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I wanted to go through, and then we have a super chat at the end. I know you had the topic that you wanted to hit on at the end, so we'll get to both those things. Just wanted to throw out, I'm just going to list some of the other players that signed contracts, undrafted free agent contracts, Sean. Maybe just pick one that you think is a very interesting spot that you think could have some potential there, okay? So first and foremost, Sam Hartman was signed as a priority free agent by the Washington Commanders. He was given $225,000 guaranteed money, so the highest that anybody has been incentivized to sign with a NFL team. So he got a nice little payday there as a UDFA. Also signed, Spencer Schrader, Indianapolis Colts, reunited. Well, not reuniting, technically he never played for, but being able to go over, obviously previous special teams coach in Notre Dame is out in Indianapolis, so that's an interesting little tidbit there. Los Angeles Chargers signed Thomas Harper, former Notre Dame nickel, who's listed as a safety by the Los Angeles Chargers, so we'll see if that's where they end up playing him potentially in camp. So he signed for a priority free agent deal. Also, we had Michael Vinson, Sean, sign a – so he's getting a mini camp invite with the Indianapolis Colts. So he will be reunited with his former special teams coach there for a mini camp invite. Now, the designations, the differences here, priority free agents are the one – again, priority, right? Right after the draft, that's who's signing. That's the first guys that we want to bring into our organization. A lot more guaranteed money. UDFA, regular undrafted free agent, usually they come in after the draft, but they're usually on a much smaller pay scale of priority. And then mini camp invites, guys that are invited to come to camp, and if they impress, then maybe they'll get signed by that organization. So there's different levels of free agents versus priority free agents versus undrafted free agents versus minicamp invites. That's kind of how that hierarchy goes. I believe there was one more big one, Sean. Let me make sure that there was one that I missed. Oh, here it is. Bo Bauer, Sean. Bo Bauer got signed. What team was it? Was it the Commanders as well? I feel like it was the Commanders. I could be wrong about that. Let me pull it up real quick. I thought Bo Bauer got signed by the Commanders. Was that who it was? Man, I had it right in this thread somewhere, but now I'm missing it. Bo Bauer. I know he got signed. Yes, it was the Commander. So Bo Bauer, 2023 NFL draft prospect. If you remember, Sean, he was the one that had gotten, and obviously you know who Bo Bauer is, but he had gotten injured late into his season, and they were talking about potentially transitioning to a long snapper. They were talking about, you know, trying to do that arc, but he is signed. He was signed. I know he was at Pro Day this year. Commanders signed Bo Bauer as well. So is there any of those that have piqued your interest? The guy that you're kind of waiting to see what they were able to do in camp?
Commanders really did their due diligence on the Notre Dame roster. But Bo Bauer is at the pro day too, man.
Yep.
Thomas Harper.
Thomas Harper's an interesting one.
This goes back to what the conversation you and I were having during the pro day. I'm sending you his numbers. I'm proud too. My numbers were kind of right there with the official numbers. I was like, okay, my watch is on point. But we're going back and forth, and I'm sending you the numbers, and you're like, really? I'm like, hey, man, I'm just as shocked as you. But the young man, he stole the day. He was definitely the star of the day at the pro day with his performance. And the first thing you said was, I didn't see that explosiveness on film.
Not like that, man. It was like 42 inch vert, right? Or something like that. It was a wild number. Yeah.
And I think it showed up in his three cone.
Yeah.
Like all of the other numbers were elite. And then his three cone was kind of like, I don't even know if it was average. It might have been below average. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you see the translation or the transition doesn't happen on film. But You know, that's where someone falls in love with the pro day and says, yo, there has to be something here. And this film wasn't, it just wasn't lining up with what we saw today. So he's worth bringing in, right? Yo, it has to be something there. His film is okay. The explosiveness is absolutely amazing. You know, we're not going to draft him, but hey, he's definitely worth the look as an undrafted free agent.
Yeah. So he's a very interesting player, Sean, because I think that he's kind of in a weird bucket of played nickel, but I think his skill set does transition better to safety. I don't think he quite has the movement skills to be a full-time nickel that's going to play a lot of man coverage. So he's going to have to play safety a little bit, which obviously he knows the guy that's coaching defensive backs over there, right? Knows the safeties coach. His name's Chris O'Leary. So it's good for him as a defensive system with the Los Angeles Chargers to have that known commodity. The other one that's very interesting, Sean, is Washington Commanders, right? Washington Commanders, obviously they drafted Jaden Daniels, but there's a need for a backup. There's a need. They traded Sam Howell this offseason. Mm-hmm. Seattle Seahawks. Could Sam Hartman cling to a roster spot?
Well, it's not backup apples, apples, but what are you saying? This is RG3, Kirk Cousins all over again?
Man, I don't know. I wasn't saying that at all. No, I did not say that even slightly. You caught me off guard while I was trying to text someone real quick. No, it's nothing like that. But a backup role, can he stick? I mean, yeah. It's possible.
Yeah. Those are the two guys that I think, yeah, I would say Sam Hartman and definitely Thomas Harper.
Yeah.
Are two very interesting UDFAs.
Yep. And, I mean, I don't know the special team situation for Indianapolis, but obviously we'll have Spencer Schrader and Michael Vincent on a rookie mini camp for Vincent. So either one of those guys. I mean, obviously they know Brian Mason pretty well, right? Or at least one of them knows Brian Mason. So that'll be interesting to see.
Growing up, I wish someone had told me you could make some money for about 10 to 12 years if you can learn how to snap the ball for a punt and kicks.
Just a little bit more to that.
Saying, but that would have been a more realistic thing for me on the football field. Like, oh man, okay, sure. let me learn this. I was skinny back then, though. I don't think I would have been a good.
I wish I was skinny. Skinny sounds nice. Sean, we had a super chat, and then I know you wanted to end this with a conversation, right? So we're gonna go to Pete Weber first here. Pete says, and Pete, thank you so much for the super chat, man. It's very appreciated. Bowling legend, Pete Weber. So speaking of the draft, I saw a way too early mock draft that had Riley Leonard as a top 25 player for the 2025 draft. What's your opinion on that rise and draft? Sean, I was going to start this next segment. We're talking a little bit about 2025 players on this one, right? I was going to start a little bit.
I'll take it from one angle and you will take it. I'll let you take the rest. Okay. Pete, I'm going to take that and say from your mouth to God's ears. Because okay. If God hears that request, that means Notre Dame has had a really great season.
Oh, yeah.
I'm fine with that.
And do I think that it could happen? Sure. But I'll say this, Pete, and I want to start the conversation off here, and then we'll go a little deeper because you gave a super chat, which means you paid for the time here, sir, which we appreciate. Sean, I hate, and I put this on Twitter earlier, I hate way too early mock drafts and big boards because 95% of the people that put them out, all due respect, have not done enough work to have a 2025 mock draft or big board. They haven't done that work yet. You know, when I put my first mock draft out every preseason, Sean, it's like early August when I feel like I've done enough work to put a realistic mock of guys that I've watched film on and done enough information on, and a guys that I have a clear opinion on. And I'm not faulting the NFL draft analysts that are putting these out. Because you know why? Some of these platforms are like, hey, man, it's your turn for the early mock draft. Oh, okay, cool. And they just put a bunch of names out there, right? And happens every year. I don't like the process. It's very clickbait driven. It 100% is. Now, that being said, do I think Riley Leonard could be a top 25 player next year? Yeah, there's a reality. There is a reality that happens for sure. Would I have him in a top 25 mock draft right now? The answer is no. I wouldn't have him based upon what I've seen because he didn't play enough last year, Pete. I needed to see a full season. He's coming off an injury. He's got another injury happening right now, or at least a recurring issue with that previous injury. And I just need to see a little bit more. I mean, like by midseason, could I see him being in a first round mock draft from myself? Yeah, 100%. But right now, I would not have him in a first round mock. I probably wouldn't. There are not many quarterbacks that I would, though, Sean. I mean, honestly, like this situation, Pete, might be more a situation of we always know there's going to be a high quarterback demand, but also the quarterback class next year looks like it's going to kind of stink early on. That's what it looks like. Carson Beck maybe is a guy from Georgia. He looked pretty good at times. Shedeur Sanders looked pretty good at times. I don't know if he takes that jump, but we're going to see. Let's be honest. Quinn Ewers in the first round of mock drafts. Mm-hmm. Child, please, at this moment. Like, no, thank you. I'll pass on that.
If he holds off Arch.
Well, he'll hold off Arch, I think. But I'm not comfortable calling him a first-round player right now. The other one, Sean, that I've seen, Drew Aller. Give me a break. Drew Aller last year? He was awful last year. He was bad. Bad football player last year. So he should not be in a first-round conversation either. But there has to be quarterbacks in the first round, Sean, unless it's a Kenny Pickett year where Kenny Pickett goes 20th and everybody else, no other first-round picks. I mean, that's always possible. But, yeah, there's some first-round quarterbacks right now where you're just like, bro, no. Like, not a chance. Not a chance.
There are three quarterbacks at Notre Dame better than Drew Aller right now.
Well, that's a bit – see, now that's a spicy take. That's a spicy take.
I'll stand on that. I'll take three of them, minimum three of the four in the quarterback room over Drew Aller right now. Right. And the Penn State coaching staff would too.
And the Penn State. Are you saying there's some tampering probably happening right now, Sean? Are you saying there's some tampering right now?
I would dare not say anything like that on Irish Breakdown. I wouldn't put that.
You don't put that in the universe?
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't do that.
See, like Archer said that Cam Ward was in an early first round mock draft. Hey, man, I'm more accepting of that than Drew Aller right now, though. Like, again, Cam Ward should not be a first rounder either, but right now anyway. But I'm more accepting of that than Drew Aller right now. I just am. I haven't seen anything from Drew.
You know what? It is a dip because you come from this year and there's a dip, and then I think you go back up at 26.
Right.
Take the 26 class, jump to see. I mean, we have to wait and see, but Dante Moore does. We have to wait and see what the Fajita kid in Arizona, what he does. There are some kids, you know, that bear watching in their sophomore years that are going to be eligible the previous year. I think that quarterback class has a chance to maybe, like, does Carson Beck even come out?
He probably will. He'll have 2 years of starting experience at that point. True. He'll be past that dreaded one-year starter label. He'll be done. Also, I wish Noah Fifita wasn't 5'9". That would be great if Noah Fifita wasn't 5'9", but he might be 5'9". But I do
what
like.
Did I say? Did I say Vegeta? What did I say? I think I said.
I think you said Vegeta, like yeah, Dragon Ball Z, but Fifita.
Yeah.
No, Fifita. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good player, though. Really good college player. I don't know if he's an NFL kid, but very good college player. There's no doubt. Dang. So, yeah. Yeah.
But no. Here it is.
Here it is.
Please tell me. Yeah, you know.
Please
tell me. Get the other super chat. Let's get the other super chat so we don't forget.
All right. Well, Pete, appreciate it, man. We'll be talking about first round mock drafts, I'm sure, for the rest of the year. Again, all due respect to Jack Kaiser, Sean, but there was a reputable, quote unquote, not actually reputable draft site that had Jack Kaiser in a first round mock like last year. So we'll chill.
You said, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, Walter Football. Shout out Walter Football, who actually follows me on Twitter, which is kind of weird, but yeah. Next super chat, Andy Milton fan. Super chat. Thank you so much, sir. How are you, Nathan? If not injured, where is Jordan Travis drafted? What was Travis drafted? Fifth round, I think? Fifth or sixth?
Yeah, he probably goes around earlier. Yeah. Maybe late third.
Yeah. He might go fourth or fifth, Nathan. Yeah. Look, man. Jordan Travis was a very good college football player the last 2 years. I think that he has a chance to stick potentially in the NFL as a backup, maybe a Tyrod Taylor-esque type of arc. But I don't think he was going to be much higher demanded. Like I never saw a day two football player from Jordan Travis. Pretty good though. He's a good football player. I mean, well, I should rephrase. Very good college football player. Average prospects. I mean, like I think fourth to fifth round was fair. I think that was fair for Jordan Travis. The bigger question is, what if Jordan Travis never got hurt for Florida State, Sean? Then what would that conversation have been? Because Florida State was a very good team when Jordan Travis was playing. Unfortunately, things got derailed when Tate Rodemaker and Brock Glenn had to take over down the stretch. But, yeah.
Then I think we would have had a very big argument in the committee room about who to leave out between Texas and Alabama.
Yeah.
Because the three undefeated teams had to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt.
Florida State, Michigan, Washington. They have to be in it. Now you have to tell Texas or Alabama who won their conference championships. One of them?
Yeah.
Gentlemen. Sorry.
You're out of here.
And Texas beat Alabama. So that probably would have been really simple.
Yeah. Yeah, the head-to-head was an obvious one.
Yeah. So that's the impact of Jordan Travis's injury. It saved the SEC, the new SEC, because Darryl claimed we had two teams in the playoff last year, counting Texas the year before they came officially came to the conference.
Yep. And Nathan, it's not just a fifth-round draft pick is gone. It was the quarterback of your team, brother. It was the quarterback of your team. It was Jordan Travis made the thing go, right? Like, they had other good players, obviously. Like, Keon Coleman's very talented. Johnny Wilson got drafted. Trey Benson got drafted. But we saw the difference, did we not, Sean? The difference between Jordan Travis and Tate Rodemaker or Jordan Travis and Brock Glenn, that was dire, man. That was a completely different team.
Maybe that's what N.D. Milton fan is kind of alluding to, is that, you should have somebody good enough to get you across the finish line with him being injured, right? It goes to the comfort level that we feel like, regardless of, we have our preference on who we would love the backup to be for Notre Dame.
Sure.
But with that backup, I feel comfortable. I feel comfortable going, if heaven forbid that Notre Dame's in that same situation, I don't think Notre Dame gets dinged the same way Florida State does. I don't. Because I think people look at Notre Dame's roster and say, oh, well, they do have those two guys playing. So, yeah, maybe that's something that Norvell dropped the ball on, is making sure he had a backup.
Yeah, it's very possible. So I think that is, if anyone wants to throw in a late super chat, please throw it in. Please throw it in. But Sean, there was something that you wanted to end this conversation with, so I'll give you the floor, sir.
I'll keep it quick and simple. Most people say that Caleb Williams is stepping into the best situation a number one overall pick has ever stepped into. Is he even stepping into the best situation in his own division as a quarterback?
Yeah, this is what you texted me about, right? This is what you texted me about. Yeah. I think so this is the Minnesota versus the Chicago Bears conversation, right?
This is not a JJ versus Caleb. This is play caller, offensive line, weapons,
I think Minnesota is the better situation over Chicago slightly, but that being said, I do think that Chicago is a pretty good situation.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. I mean, because you think about the pass catchers, right? It's like DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, Cole Kmet. They signed DeAndre Swift too, did they not? So like they got some weapons, right? They got some weapons there. So that's cool. Offensive line still needs work. I think it's okay. It's trending in a better direction than it once was. So I think it's okay. I think that it's a good situation. Like, there's no doubt. But I do give the edge to Minnesota, because Minnesota might not have a running back as good as DeAndre Swift, but they do have Justin Jefferson, who is...
Would take Aaron Jones over DeAndre Swift?
I mean, in a vacuum, if both healthy, yes, but Aaron Jones gets banged up a little bit. At least he has the last couple years. I know DeAndre Swift has a little bit, but last year DeAndre Swift was pretty dang good, man. He was pretty dang good for Philly last year.
Yeah.
But they have Justin Jefferson, who's fantastic, right? Really good player. Probably the best receiver in the NFL when healthy. I know he was banged up last year, but Sean, he had 1,000 yards and only played like 8 games or something like that, 9 games or whatever. Ridiculous. Like, all right, cool.
It's ridiculous.
Also have Jordan Addison, who's a very good number two. Very good. And then when he gets back, I don't know if he's going to be available to begin the season, but it might be. TJ Hockenson's very good tight ends, yeah. Right? And then they have two. I think they also have the better offensive tackle duo.
Derek Thomas, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they have Brian O'Neill at right, very mm-hmm. good. Christian Darrisaw, a little bit injury plagued at times, but very good when he does play. So I think, and also here's the big separator though, because I think you could fight back either way.
Yeah.
I'll take Kevin O'Connell over.
Absolutely.
Chicago's play calling situation.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I said it just being objective. I'm just trying to be objective, right?
Yep.
I don't love JJ McCarthy, but if JJ McCarthy had for who he is, if he had a team to go to, it's like, okay, you went to the right team. I just watched this dude win 7 games with Josh Dobbs and you know, and should have they lost a game to the Bears on Monday night that they should not have lost.
Yep.
Right. A late mistake by Josh Dobbs. And it's like, yo, the magic he worked without his quarterback and number one receiver.
Yep. Well, Sean, and Christopher Hardy says we'll find out quickly if JJ can elevate a team and carry them. I don't think he has to on the Minnesota team. I don't think he has to. Yeah.
Caleb has to do that. JJ doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
I think Caleb has to do that from a talent standpoint. He has to do that from an expectation standpoint.
Right, right.
He has to do that because the Vikings and the Bears had the exact same record.
Yep.
Last year. The exact same record.
I'm a big believer that eventually they will have to, right? So, like, let's say in the ideal world, let's say Minnesota, for their sake, makes the playoffs and JJ's good, like a solid mm-hmm. player for them, but he's a little bit more of a game manager like we expect that he probably will be, right? In the playoffs, I agree with you, Christopher. There is going to be a moment where JJ has to elevate. Absolutely. There's no doubt. But for the most of the season, though, I don't think he has to be an elevator at all. I think he just needs to be part of the machine and a good part of the machine. That's all I think he has to be.
So Kirk Cousins went to the playoffs and had Minnesota playing really well before his injury.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So let's just say the distance that JJ McCarthy needs to travel is a lot shorter than the distance Caleb Williams needs to travel.
Yeah.
Right? Because if he can just beat Kirk Cousins, like if JJ could beat Kirk Cousins, they're expecting Caleb Williams to be Pat. That dude, that's the expectation. Like, dude, he's the next Pat Mahomes. He's the next elite guy.
And the Bears need him to be that, Sean, because otherwise Matt Eberflus is probably going to be out, isn't he? I mean, like, he's got to be on a short leash.
He needs to be out. Oh, absolutely.
He has to be on a short leash because he's done nothing his first 2 years to make you feel solid about what he's doing. They brought in a new offensive coordinator. They went after the big quarterback. Like they have obviously been like, hey man, we need to upgrade the offensive side of the football. And if Matt Eberflus, if they don't do well this year at all, like let's say they go 6-11 or something like that, Matt Eberflus has to be gone, right? Like I don't think there's any situation where you look at him and be like, oh no, it's okay, Matt, you get another year. Like he's got to be gone, right? Has to be.
Matter of fact, Daniels might have gone to the worst. I'm glad. Oh man. Daniels might have gone at the number 2 pick. He might have gone to the worst situation.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree.
Because when you start comparing like playmakers, situation, expectations, all this. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about it. I don't know.
New England, man. New England.
Oh, you're right.
Tough situation.
Right. I actually like. Yeah, you're right. I can't even argue that.
Their offensive line is a major work in progress.
Yeah.
Their wide receiver position is bad. Like,
you're right.
It's not a great situation, man.
Yeah. But would you put Daniels like 4?
In the situation department?
Because this is how I would rank. I would put JJ 1, Caleb 2, Bo Nix 3 with Sean Payton. Mm-hmm. And then I would go Daniels, Mate. And I think 3 and 4 could be interchangeable.
You know, it's funny. You're not even throwing Penix in there because it's just like, we're not going to see the dude for 4 years, so who cares?
I mean, well, his situation is not, I would expect Sam Darnold is probably going to start. Look, I'm looking at JJ as the starter. I don't even count Sam Darnold. It's like, maybe he starts. to begin the year, but eventually JJ's the guy. We know that. Mm-hmm. Kurt's going to play minimum 1 year if he stays healthy, two before his money comes kind of starts to come off the books.
Yeah, they can get out of his contract pretty easily after two years. Is kind of the
Even if you put Penix in there, I would say, well, hey, no, Penix might be three. Man, I mean, a kid that can just go and sit and wait and get better and watch them build up, because the talent is there offensively at the skill positions.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'll say this, Sean. I know you're very down on the Chicago Bears organization, but whoever the next head coach is walking into some talent, man. You got some talent on the roster. There's some talent there, man. There really is.
Has to be an offensive guy, though. Because I think they set up Justin Fields to fail. I think they're setting Eberflus up to fail. They're like, okay, you got one more year, right? And now it's like, if you don't win with this rookie quarterback,
right,
and we still haven't fixed the offensive line, if you don't win with this rookie quarterback, it's going to be on you and the defense.
Yeah. All right. And it's typically how teams do operate, is that we just had a defensive coach, defensive-minded head coach. Let's go opposite. You rarely ever see a guy just say, like, let's go for a similar idea of how to build this roster the next year. I mean, that rarely ever happens. So, yeah, I think that is a very good point. I mean, we just talked about Minnesota, right? What did Minnesota do? They went from Mike Zimmer, old school defensive coordinator, to young, up and cunning offensive mind Kevin O'Connell. Like, that was the transition that they made, right? And we see that all the time. So we see that all the time. Very interesting. I am actually incredibly curious to see how the quarterbacks play out in year one. I just hope, Sean, because I already know what's going to happen. Ready? You know what's going to happen? This is going to be a situation that we had a couple years ago where a quarterback's in a decent situation and then everyone loses their minds and says, oh, man, all the JJ haters are idiots. It's going to happen, right? They're going to say it. Joao, JJ was good as a rookie. You know who else was good as a rookie and people were proclaiming him to be the best quarterback in his class ever his rookie year? Mac Jones. Michael McCorkle Jones was really good as a rookie. You know what happened though, guys? People got film on him. People found out about him. They saw his weaknesses, his tendencies, and he sucked. Okay? So let's not get over the top on rookie quarterback performance, because we see that stuff happen all the time. You know who also stunk as a rookie, Sean? Matt Stafford. Peyton Manning. Like, a lot of really good quarterbacks were not very good as rookies. Yes, and for people that don't know, McCorkle is Mac Jones' middle name. That's where the Mac comes from. McCorkle. Michael McCorkle Jones. One of the worst names of all time, no doubt. I don't know why anybody thought that a guy named McCorkle would be a good NFL quarterback, but another conversation for a different day there, Sean, I think.